Hello, I'm Dimitris Moraitis, and this is number 0327 of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it's coming to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0327. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Charlotte Ray, star of The Facts of Life. She shares her memoirs entitled The Facts of My Life. Where did the idea for the book come from?
Well, it was my son who decided. I mean, he said to me when I was 87 and a half, he said, Ma, it's time you wrote your memoirs. And I said, you're a writer. Are you up for it? And he said, yeah, I think it would be a good thing. Instead of saying, and then I was this, and I did this, and this was so marvelous and all that stuff. I would just let it all hang out, my life. Some of it is sweet and some of it is very difficult, and so there it is.
Voice God and author Ben Patrick Johnson talks about his new novel, Splinters.
It's a little darker than some of my previous writing, less humor, and it explores addiction and codependency as we look at the relationship of two young gay men, one of them who has a crystal meth addiction and the other one who is, I would say, hopelessly codependent. And it's written first person from the perspective, and this was a risk for me, writing from the perspective of a young African-American man, because guess what? I'm not black.
Nina Keneally is the creator of the innovative new business, Need a Mom. How did this start?
I'm in the part of Brooklyn called Bushwick, which has a reputation for being full of young, striving people. And just living in my neighborhood, going to restaurants, walking my dog, I got to know a lot of these people. And as time went by, and they got to know me, and trust me, they would bring up issues that were going on in their lives. And also I heard some of them talking about that they love their parents love them, but sometimes conversations with their mom would go off track, and they got a little frustrated because they really just wanted to kind of talk to someone straight on about what was going on in their lives. So that was the genesis of the idea.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0327 was Dimitrios Moraitis. He's a Stuff File program fan. Thank you very much, Dimi, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's heard also on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Now, are you tired of political correctness? Well, hey folks, it's only getting worse. Skeptics feared it was just a matter of time until the PC movement turned its attention to the dignity of thieves. San Francisco's SFGate.com reported in November on a discussion in an upscale neighborhood about whether someone committing petty nonviolent theft should be referred to by the offensive term criminal, rather than, example, the person who stole my bicycle, since criminal implies a harsher level of evil and fails to acknowledge factors that might have caused momentary desperation by a person in severe need. I'm not buying it. Criminal still works for me. And for those in the upscale neighborhoods where this was being debated, idiots also still works for me. Yeah. Okay, I hope you're sitting down for this next idiotic explanation. 55-year-old Reginald Gildersleeve was free on bond with an extensive rap sheet. He decided to wave a gun as he threatened a clerk and tried to rob a store in Chicago on Halloween night, until a customer who was licensed to carry drew his own gun and, with multiple shots, killed Gildersleeve. Closer inspection revealed Gildersleeve's weapon to be merely a paintball gun, leading the deceased man's stepson to complain later that some people, and the some people he's referring to would be the licensed shooter, don't actually know how to use guns. They go to firing ranges, but it's not the same as a bullet going into flesh. Someone's got to answer for that. Son, I know it's your stepdad who is dead and you're probably grieving, But could you possibly say anything more idiotic than that? Or perhaps you are speaking from experience when you mention a bullet going through flesh. Either way, I believe the guy who tried to rob the store has already answered for that. And in October, the student newspaper at Toronto's Ryerson University reported a mighty scandal that upset the student body. The school's executive office's restrooms continually and routinely supply 2-ply toilet paper, while most other campus buildings offer only 1-ply. Now, following up on this hard-hitting Ryerson eye-openers exposé, the Canadian press noted that the universities of Guelph, Ottawa, and Toronto comfort all toilet users' bottoms the same. Ryerson officials defensively noted that older plumbing in many of their buildings can't handle 2-ply paper. This is the kind of reporting that would make Woodward and Bernstein oh so proud. Nice to see investigative journalism getting to the bottom of something. Moving right along, Philip White of Eagle, Colorado, who is blind, was at the Greyhound bus terminal in downtown Denver trying to get home, but he was told the bus he wanted to board was full, and he not only had to get off the bus, he had to leave the station entirely. A bus station security guard called 911 complaining White was trespassing. The responding officer, Killian Chafin, found White on the phone, calling 911 himself, trying to get police help. White asked if he could touch Chafin's badge, a common way for a blind person to confirm someone is an officer. Chafin refused, grabbed White, and slammed his head into the ticket counter, leaving him bloodied. White, who was at the time 77 years old, was handcuffed and held for 8 hours and never charged with any crime. Now, 3 years later, a federal jury has awarded him $400,000 in an excessive force case, but Chafin wasn't fired. "We reviewed the case," the department spokesperson said. "We didn't find any violations of policy." Okay. Riddle me this, Batman. If the police department didn't fire Chafin or reprimand him or demote him because the department didn't find any violations of policy, then how could a beaten, totally blind 77-year-old man, who's now, I guess, 80, be awarded $400,000? I mean, he won his case. The cop did something that was clearly wrong. Perhaps one should look at the police department policy to see exactly where it's written that you can brutally beat up a defenseless senior. Yeah. Meanwhile, U.S. parents have a right to homeschool their kids, but are subject to varying degrees of regulation, with Texas, no surprise, the most lax, and one El Paso family will have a day before the Texas Supreme Court after one of its kids was reported declining to study because education was useless since he was waiting to be raptured, as described in the Bible's book of Revelation. Wow. If that kid thinks waiting in a doctor's office is an eternity, wait until he gets a load of the lag time he'll be dealing with to be beamed towards the heavens. Yeah. If you're waiting for the rapture, pal, you're waiting a long time. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, well, let's see what's new in the latest edition of Cavalcade of Fetishes. Yes, we have two quick items to share with you on that one. Number one, among the approximately 100 arrests Seattle police made in an October drug sting were a man who was 63 years old and a woman who was 58, accused only of retail theft of $150,000 worth of goods, including about 400 pairs of jeans. Police say the couple ordered items from shoplifters and seemed to have an insatiable appetite for denim. And story number two, in November, police in Bethel, Connecticut, arrested 50-year-old Nelson Montalvo, accused of taking about 30 items of underwear from one particular home. Montalvo's motive is being investigated, but police said his modus operandi was to remove items, cut holes in them, and then return them to the house. Different strokes for different folks. You know, perhaps that last guy worked for an underwear manufacturer and was trying to drum up more sales. Probably not. Anyway, let's get to our first guest, shall we? Charlotte Ray is best known for her role as Mrs. Garrett on the TV series Different Strokes and The Facts of Life. She has just released her new memoir entitled The Facts of My Life. And she joins us right now on the line from California. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thank you very much for doing this.
Yeah, thank you.
So you've now come up with your memoir. It's been a little while since the television shows The Facts of Life and Different Strokes have been on. What made you decide to write this memoir now?
Well, it was my son who decided. I mean, he said to me when I was 87 and a half, he said, Ma, it's time you wrote your memoirs. And he's a writer. And I said, well, I never thought of it because I'm not a writer. But you're a writer. Are you up for it? And he said, yeah, I think it would be a good thing. And so we did it together. And as we were writing it, I thought, well, instead of saying, and then I was this, and I did this, and this was so marvelous, and all that stuff. I would just let it all hang out, my life. Let it all be out there like everybody else's life. Some of it is sweet, and some of it is very, very difficult. And so there it is, my life.
You've written this, as you say, with your son, right? That would be Larry? Larry Strauss?
Yeah, Larry Strauss, as in Johann Strauss, and he's a writer. He's written wonderful books, and he's also a teacher in a school in South Central Los Angeles, and he works with mostly African American and Latino students and encourages them to move on and educate themselves and get into college, and tries to help those who could apply themselves into getting scholarships and raising funds for their books and, you know, lodgings and all that stuff. You know, he likes his work. Yes, he does. And he's a good writer and a good teacher. And he's the athletic director at the school, too.
What's it like writing a book like this, which basically tells your life story, with your own son? I mean, that must be, in addition to just the fact that you're writing a book with your son, must be a bonding experience with the two of you.
It was indeed. And there were a few moments that came to light where I made amends to him, you know, for things that I could have been a little more attentive to him, because I was involved with my divorce and involved with my other child, and who was challenged. It was a very rich, powerful experience.
You had to place your child in an institution, correct?
That was something that happened at the long end of a long road of trying to do something that I thought would be better for him. But we did find a wonderful place in California. It no longer exists, but it was Camarillo, and they had a wonderful, wonderful unit for those developmentally disabled. And there was a wonderful parent group involved, and we would take them out and do things with them. And Easter was a big deal, and Christmas, and the parents were involved, and my husband and I were involved, and Larry, and then they sold it to and put a college there instead, and that was kind of sad because it was a wonderful place, and but it was wonderful when he had it. It was wonderful.
As an actress, you have spent a lot of time working on various series with children. Was that a constant reminder to you as an actress but as a mom of what had gone on in your own life, working with kids all the time?
Well, the first one was Sesame Street. I was Molly the Mail Lady on Sesame Street with Oscar the Grouch and Big Bird. And the kids were so adorable and beautiful. And it was very difficult for me because they were so precocious and delightful and normal and seemingly happy. And it was hard because I was with a child who had deep challenges, and then the facts of life and the different strokes. Oh, I loved being with them. I really did. And it wasn't painful. That was not painful. By that time, we were kind of in a good situation with Andy in California with the wonderful Camarillo. It was wonderful, Camarillo State Hospital. Charlie Parker was there for his drug thing. He wrote a song about Camarillo. I don't know if it's called Flying in Camarillo. I don't know. I can't remember. Anyway, that's true. I was with a lot of children. Now, I did a lot of other sitcoms, but that's true. There were three of them. Mm-hmm.
You were also working in a time much different to today, and by that I mean now we have Twitter and Facebook and the tabloids, and people can't seem to have a private life and do the kinds of things that the average people could do, the average person can do, without it being under the microscope of somebody online. With all that's gone on in your life, and you talk about it in your book, you talk about your son, you talk about discovering that your husband of 25 years was gay. You discuss all this in your book. Yet at the time that all this was going on, the general population had no idea, right?
None. Nobody had any idea. No. No, I don't. No. No, well, I mean, I was never anyone who went in for all the PR that some people do, you know. I led a very quiet life. I was busy with the kids and with the work, you know.
You also, I mean, again, we know you from television, but you had a career that goes back to Broadway as well. You worked the boards. Was that something that, because whenever I talk to actors, especially film and television actors, they always go on about how much they enjoyed working the stage. Are you in that category as well?
Yes, absolutely. There's nothing like the theater. Nothing like it. Wow. You know, I was the original Mammy Yoakum and Little Abner on Broadway. And I don't want to talk about all the wonderful things that I was able to do. I'm so grateful for it. But I had a long, long, wonderful life in theater. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be doing something in the spring at the Kirk Douglas Theater in L.A. It's a Samuel Beckett play called Endgame, and I did I've done Shakespeare in the Park, you know, with Stacy Keach and Sam Waterston and I forget his name. Anyway, Romeo and Juliet. I was the nurse and Mistress Quickly in Henry IV, Part One, Part Two, and then there was a Samuel Beckett play, a beautiful play called Happy Days, not like the series Happy Days, but a woman who's stuck in a mound, and from the waist up she's okay, and then in the second act, the mound is up to her neck, and it's Samuel Beckett, and it's a challenge, and I loved it. She was a wonderful, noble soul, and I don't know, I've done so many wonderful roles, and I'm so grateful, but I love television, I love film, I love it all, I love I love it.
And one of the things, I mean, even though you've done everything, again, you're so well known for the characters you've played on television, and they were such fun, loving characters. I get the feeling that when you meet fans on the street, all they want to do is hug you.
Do you want to know something funny? About a year and a half ago, when I was in New York, we took the subway down to see a play, my friend and I, and we took the subway back up, and this tall, nice-looking young man, he obviously grew up with the Facts of Life and Mrs. Garrett, and he went, ah! And he was in the subway station going in, and I was going out, and he went, and I went, and we hugged, and that was it. And then he went down the stairs to the subway, and I went out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I wish I could give you a hug now. Charlotte, the book is called The Facts of My Life. It tells so much about your life, both on the stage, on television, and your personal life, and some of the people you've worked with over the years and even went to school with, like Paul Lynn, Patricia Neal, and Cloris Leachman. It's chocked full of information. I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us, Charlotte.
Well, you're a lovely interviewer, and if I ever get to Montreal, I'll give you a jingle. Okay?
Okay. Thank you very much, Charlotte.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Actress Charlotte Ray. Her new memoir is entitled The Facts of My Life. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0327, and you'll find links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. You know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File program. It's the choice of 4 out of 5 dentists. The 5th dentist also listens, but that's just because he follows the crowd. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, our buddy, our pal, our chum, the voice of this show, who you just heard like seconds ago, Ben Patrick Johnson will be on talking about his new book, Splinters. Plus, we'll meet the creator of Need a Mom. And of course, there's an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and much more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, wackiness in the news seems to have a stranglehold on Florida, as you know, so let's check out what's happening in that state. A Florida woman was arrested after calling a local police station and asking for wings and cigarettes. 45-year-old Leanne Gay Watson is accused of calling police and asking them to bring her wings and cigarettes, claiming that she was too drunk to drive and get them herself. When officers arrived, she repeatedly asked them for cigarettes while claiming the call was a joke. The Orlando Sentinel reports that police reports say that she had switched back and forth between hysterical laughter and sobbing while being interviewed and was ultimately handcuffed and placed in a patrol car. When she arrived at the Lake County Jail, she reportedly began shouting profanities, banging her head against the partition, and kicking up her legs toward the ceiling. I'm assuming she was sitting down at that point. At least I hope so. I mean, after being warned four times, police restrained her legs and arms to prevent her from harming herself and also, obviously, harming others. You know, I live in Montreal, and sometimes a craving for wings has led me to grabbing my passport and driving to Vermont. So I know a thing or two about wing passion, but I never thought to call the cops to make a delivery. And by the way, isn't there anyone in her neck of the woods that would deliver wings to her in her time of need? There must be someone. Anyway, still with Florida, Michael Zaliga was to receive an award at a conference. So the Pinellas County, Florida Sheriff's deputy packed his luggage into his patrol car and headed to the Mothers Against Drunk Driving event in Fort Lauderdale. He attended some training on DUI enforcement, but quickly left. He arrested more than 100 people for DUI, but he was leaving that unit. He did try to go to the banquet to pick up the award, but was staggeringly drunk, one witness said. Zaliga had brought a bottle of whiskey in his luggage. Now, Gulfport Police Chief Robert Vincent concluded that he was wasted and found his boss, who sent him back to his room. Zaliga served a one-day paid suspension and was ordered to apologize for addressing Vincent disrespectfully. He is still a deputy and now a detective in the unit responsible for investigating crimes against children. I don't want to see what he brings with him when he goes to get an award for that. And, again with Florida, police were called to the Sebastian, Florida home of Angela Austin Knight. When officers arrived, they found her in the kitchen with a bottle of liquor and her husband locked in the bathroom. The husband said the two had argued and at some point went outside. He said she grew more violent and started hitting him, so he ran inside and locked the door. After realizing the door was locked, the police report notes, Angela then grabbed a nearby porcelain toilet lid and used it to break the kitchen window where she made entry into the residence. Once inside, Austin Knight threatened to hurt him further with the porcelain toilet lid. Austin Knight, who appeared intoxicated and gave a different version of the incident, was arrested and taken to jail. Now, one thing's for sure, their relationship is definitely now in the toilet. But seriously, don't the facts of this story tell you everything you need to know about the neighborhood? I mean, who normally outside of their house has a porcelain toilet lid at the ready for battle? There's a Jeff Foxworthy line that seems to apply here. Moving right along, when 26-year-old Luis Orellana Riviera was released from a Des Moines, Iowa hospital at 6 a.m., he naturally took a taxi home. The cabbie objected. When the hack came out of the hospital to where he left his cab idling, he called police to report it stolen. Officers searching the area found Luis just as he was getting out of the cab. 30 minutes later, he had the car keys in his pocket. He was arrested and charged with theft. Luis allegedly admitted to stealing the taxi, noting that he didn't want to walk the 6 blocks home. Wow, half an hour to go 6 blocks at 6 a.m. in Des Moines? And people think New York and Los Angeles has bad traffic. Wow. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, police officers in Boston, Massachusetts heard a broadcast describing two robbery suspects in a transit station. They realized the description matched two men who had just run past, so the search was focused in the direction they saw them go. Officers quickly caught up with the suspects, and sure enough, they were carrying the mask the victims described and a fake pistol. 18-year-old Andrionique M. Dos Santos and 19-year-old Costia Reagan were charged with robbery and assault and the item they stole from the victim at gunpoint was recovered. A plastic bag of salad. So, basically, these guys got tossed for a salad. Now, anybody who knows me knows that I would never steal a salad because I don't eat salads. To me, that's not food. That's what food eats. And I don't graze. Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? Ben Patrick Johnson, the voice god who lends his talents to this very show, continues to share his talents not only through his voice, but also through his writing. His latest novel, which is his fifth, is called Splinters, and Ben has taken some time out of his very busy schedule to talk to us about his latest tome. He joins us via Skype from Los Angeles. Hello, Benjamin.
Hello, Peter. Thank you for having me on today. I really appreciate it. I love the evolution of where things have gone from you, from traditional broadcast to internet. As the times change, you change, and a lot of people are not as adaptable as you are.
Well, we certainly try.
Well, and you succeed. So it's an honor to be here on the Stuff File.
By the way, on that note, I saw you just recently. Was it on Periscope?
Yeah, Periscope. This new app. A friend of mine who's a social media activist said, hey, let's all watch this Washington event. Where, you know, years ago we would have turned to C-SPAN and hoped that it might be on, or C-SPAN 2. Now it's being broadcast on this app called Periscope, which literally until 3 days ago I didn't know existed. But I went and I thought, this is fascinating. Look at this. I have a feeling it's going to get used for all kinds of nefarious things. But you know, the way Skype can sort of go down the rabbit hole. But for the moment, it looks like it's a very interesting social media thing where people can literally live broadcast with just a push of a button. It's so ridiculously simple. Others can tune in. They can comment. And it's on everyone's smartphone app. I did a voiceover demonstration yesterday morning. And all of the broadcasts get archived, too, so people can see them. So on Periscope, I'm at BenPatrick90069, which is my zip code here in West Hollywood, Hollywood Hills. That's the same handle as I have on Twitter, at BenPatrick90069. And to keep things neat and tidy, on Facebook, you can find me at facebook.com/, guess what, BenPatrick90069.
I was watching it, and the first thing I thought of was the online show that you had for a while, which I thought was great, and sorry that you're not doing it anymore. But that's the first thing that came to my mind when I saw this.
Yeah, Life from the Left Coast. We did a webcast
exactly.
For people who don't know, back in the early 00s from 2006 until 2008. That was challenging because that was a 10-minute daily cast, and it really just ate up my time. It was written, scripted in the teleprompter, and we had produced bits, and we did it all from the house, but it was it required 8, 10, sometimes 12 hours of my time every day from culling stories, curating, putting it together, writing my own opinion piece a la Keith Olbermann, you know, each day for the thing. And it literally just ate up my life. And we had some broadcasters who wanted to take it on, and some major cable networks that were interested in rebroadcasting it. But we couldn't make it cost effective for them. So we had to just tell it goodnight.
And the other thing I noticed, two things. Basically, your annoying ongoing perfection. Yesterday in watching Periscope, two things came to mind. One, first of all, you don't age. It's like there's got to be a picture of Dorian Gray somewhere. And two, when you were doing the voiceover, not a single mistake. You know, this perfection is really annoying now. Really.
Well, first of all, in my defense, I, after 20 years as a fitness model, I understand lighting. And I understand how literally by rotating, you know, a 20 degrees, 45 degrees, boom, a camera will pick up something utterly different. Which side of your face is bathed in light? Which side of your face is dark? So, no, I am aging. I just know how to work a camera. Secondly, in terms of the material, listen to me, like knocking back and all these compliments you give me. I was doing what are called tags, which is you say basically the same sentence over and over again. And I'm certainly not perfection. I can stumble my way horribly through copy. But if you give me essentially the same sentence to read 25 times, trust me, by the third or fourth time, I pretty much can read the sentence. But anyway,
with all that going on, I do want to get to your book. Your book is called Splinters. As I mentioned in the introduction, this is your fifth book.
Yes.
What is Splinters about?
Well, Splinters is a novel. I'm a novelist. And I tend to write from my own experience. The only book that I've written that was not from my own experience was the one just before this called If the Rains Don't Cleanse, which chronicled my parents' misadventures as missionaries in Africa. But I returned with Splinters to home turf. Like my other books, it's set in West Hollywood, California, and it's My books tend to be a bit sort of morality tales. This one explores, it's a little darker than some of my previous writing, less humor, and it explores addiction and codependency as we look at the relationship of two young men, two young gay men, one of them who has a crystal meth addiction and the other one who is, I would say, hopelessly codependent. And it's written first person from the perspective, and this was a risk for me, writing from the perspective of a young African-American man, because guess what? I'm not black.
No?
Shocking. I know. But no, I'm not. It was. I wanted to bring the perspective of someone who was a minority in Los Angeles, who was a native here but felt like an outsider, and then this handsome stranger, which is something that you know that we've seen explored in American literature and film for decades. The sort of the drifter who comes through, who is alluring and enticing. But here's what's interesting about this book. I've worked with various publishers, large and small, and I've done a book or two here with this publisher or that publisher. But I wanted to make a clean, fresh break and work with a new publisher on this one. And as I put out feelers before I started writing the book to see what publisher might be interested, I was pointed towards a romance press, a gay romance press. And I thought, what the heck is this? And I thought this would never fit. But the more I explored it, I thought, can I take this tale, which I had in my head conceived as a tragedy, an American family tragedy, and can I infuse it with hope? And can I infuse it with the essence of romance and love and have something that will fit at least roughly in the romance category? So the press that I've gone with, Dream Spinner Press, they're based out of Florida. They're a very successful, probably the most successful LGBT romance press, which I understand is kind of a niche and a specialty, but they sell a lot of books. I worked with them, and we did shape it so that there is hope and for all the darkness that the book takes you through. And it's a bit grueling at moments to read. I won't pretend like it's just a light, breezy read. Hopefully it is very engaging for readers emotionally as you watch these two guys just struggle to try to make things happen, you know, for themselves. But there is hope at the end. And, you know, it's I'm actually holding a copy of the book right now. And there's a phrase that I return to several times during the book. And that is, without love, we've got nothing. With love, anything is possible. And I say on the very first page of the book, you'll see I come back to this notion over and over. Because this is a story that requires hope. This is a story that requires belief in something larger than us.
So are you saying that if you had not gone to this particular publisher, and you say it's a Dream Spinner, that maybe the book would even be more dark than it is?
Well, it yes. With the book... The book, as I originally conceived this book almost 20 years ago, and I wrote out the basics of the story, and I actually wrote a very sort of extremely rough and not good at all draft of this book. And it was a tragedy. It was an American family tragedy that focused on this addicted brother, sister, and their mother. And all three met tragic ends, and it was dark. It basically came away that we are condemned, you know, to the failures and the patterns of our past. And then it was taken up, and songs were written, and it was going to be produced as a musical. I had a talented team that I worked with, we did a workshop at the American Conservatory Theater. Can I say that better? American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco. And it was presented, and the notes we got was, wow, this is just an exciting and dynamic work, and it's freaking depressing. I don't know if we can swear on your show. It's freaking depressing. we can't put this on the main stage. People will just walk out of here wanting to slit their wrists. And so I thought, well, yeah, but life isn't always happy. And I just sat on it for a decade plus. And then, you know, as I was thinking about what to do for my next book, I thought, let me revisit this story. But let me view it from a different angle. So instead of seeing it from an omniscient or a chapter by chapter, you know, different characters' perspectives, I'm telling the whole story instead of from within the family, from an external viewer.
Okay, but you
which is the boyfriend.
Okay, but as you say, it's a darker story. You wrote this about 20 years ago. Yeah. You were in a different place than you are.
This is true.
20 years ago.
True, that's true.
Your last book dealt with your parents.
Yes.
And I know that since then, you lost your mother.
I used to say I've lost them both since then.
Lost them both since then.
Yeah, and it's...
Are those things connected in bringing this book out now?
You know, I have not considered that, Peter. Wow, what an incisive and interesting question. Potentially so. Potentially so, because that was a big piece of life work that I wanted to get done, to publish that book, If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the Africa book, while my parents were alive, to be able to hand them this testament. And certainly my perspective on life has changed from, you know, when I wrote the first draft of Splinters. I was in my 20s and I was in sort of a, not goth, but just a darker phase, and where I embraced the grit and the ugliness of life. I thought Los Angeles was cool because there had been riots here, because there was smog here, because there was ugliness here. That was neat in my 20s. Now in my 40s, I'm looking for simpler and more beautiful things, for the beauty of kindness, of compassion, for the breeze through the trees, that sort of thing, for a walk in the sun. And my priorities and my perspective have changed such that, and I think that back to your question, the passing of my parents and my own maturing and having that chapter finished has wizened and changed my perspective, and probably absolutely has influenced the way I chose to approach this same story, but through a very different lens.
It sounds like another interesting story, another interesting hit from Ben Patrick Johnson. The book is called Splinters, and I would assume you can find it in most of the ways you can find most books out there, correct?
That is absolutely correct. You can find it in some brick-and-mortar booksellers. You know, it's tougher and tougher to find booksellers that carry independent press, but it's in bookstores, Barnes & Noble, et cetera. It's also online at Amazon. It's online at all other major booksellers. Or you can go directly to dreamspinnerpress.com, get a couple of dollars off there, and support independent press.
Always a pleasure to have you on the program. Love you, big guy. Thank you very much.
Love you too, man. Talk to you soon.
Ben Patrick Johnson. Again, his latest book is Splinters. You know, they really don't come better than that, as annoyingly perfect as he is. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0327, and you'll find links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. As Americans celebrate Thanksgiving this week, children in schools across the nation are learning about how the first pilgrims relied on Native Americans to survive their first year. The members of tribes indigenous to this land taught the new settlers many things, including how to grow food and identify toxic plants. Today, there's still a lot we can learn from Native American tribes. Did you know that there are about 150 tribal courts across the United States? Unlike state and federal courts that use an adversarial system to resolve disputes, many tribal courts use a different approach. Legal experts describe it as a holistic philosophy that focuses not just on punishment and providing victims with payment, but on bringing harmony and peace to the community. Let's be fair, in recent years, U.S. courts have actually adopted some of this philosophy by promoting alternatives to litigation, like mediation and arbitration. This Thanksgiving, learn how alternative dispute resolution often leaves people thankful they ditched their lawsuit and tried something new. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
You're experiencing the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the creator of Need a Mom. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day, but right here, right now, I got one more Stuff File news story to share with you on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Police in Clarksburg, West Virginia, were called to a car crash and found the driver of an Audi had hit three parked cars. The driver identified herself to the responding officer as Hell on Wheels. But a check of her driver's license revealed her to be Amanda Dolores Alleman, age 38. Her blood alcohol was measured at 0.203%, and she was charged with aggravated driving while under the influence, three counts of striking an unattended vehicle, joyriding because she was driving the car without the permission of the owner, driving without insurance, and failure to maintain control. Now, was it control of the vehicle or control of herself? That's what I'd like to know. I will say this on Amanda's behalf. Very rarely do we have stories on the Stuff File program that involve moving violations with vehicles that includes someone with a valid driver's license. Amanda may be a lush, but her driving credentials are at least up to date. Let's look at the silver linings wherever we can, shall we? Yes. Anyway, let's get to our last guest on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? There are times when you can use some motherly advice, but for those who don't have a mother readily available or for some reason don't want to reach out to their own mom, there is one in Brooklyn who is willing to step in. Her name is Nina Keneally, and she has created a venture called Need a Mom. Nina joins us via Skype right now on the line from Brooklyn. Hi, Nina.
Hi, Peter Anthony. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for doing this.
Sure, my pleasure.
So you started this business. You have two grown sons of your own, and you decided to start a rent-a-mom business. Why did you do this, and how did you do this?
Well, and just for the record, we call it Need-a-Mom, not rent-a-mom. But yeah, I moved to Brooklyn 2 years ago after raising the kids in Connecticut. And I'm in the part of Brooklyn called Bushwick, which has a kind of reputation for being full of young, striving people. And as I went through my daily life, I met many of them in places like my yoga class. I also was a court organizer last year for an organization called Arts in Bushwick that puts on Bushwick Open Studios, the largest open studios in the country. They put it on every June. And just living in my neighborhood, going to restaurants, walking my dog, I got to know a lot of these people. And as time went by and they got to know me, and trust me, they would bring up issues that were going on in their lives, whether with roommate issues or losing a job or other things like that. And also I heard some of them talking about that they love their parents love them, but sometimes conversations with their mom would go off track because mom would ask about if they're still vegan or talk about Uncle Bob's crazy girlfriend coming for Thanksgiving. And they got a little frustrated because they really just wanted to kind of talk to someone straight on about what was going on in their lives. So that was the genesis of the idea.
Do you find just in your own daily goings on, do you find that for some reason there seems to be a different dichotomy between the relationship of moms and their children from a generation ago? Or what has changed?
Well, actually, I mean, I think by and large, most of the relationships are probably better than they were a generation ago, or at least closer, a more exchange of information. But what happens in a city like New York, and I'm sure it happens in other metropolitan areas, is that there are a lot of people who come here, and their moms are far away, and their moms don't really have a sense of what it's like to live in a metropolis like this, have to live far out maybe from where you're working, the financial pressures, the social pressures, and so the moms and kids mean well together, but the moms don't always have the perspective. And the kids know that their moms don't really understand some of the geographical and logistical problems. And I think I do. I've lived here when I was young. I live here now. My sons live here. So I get a real sense of what is confronting them.
Now, I found you because the story made news on many services. I saw it on the ABC News website. How did you garner the attention that you've garnered so far? How did this snowball?
That's a good question. The only thing I did, I started kind of fooling around with the business this summer, kind of what I would call like a soft opening. And then I decided to see if I could really get some clients. And I put a paid ad on a website called Bushwick Daily, which is sort of the go-to spot for people who want to know what's going on in Bushwick. And I guess a lot of people, besides the people in Bushwick, want to go know what's going on in Bushwick. And it got picked up, I think, first by a website called Gothamist in New York, and then by a lot of other places. It just hit a nerve for some reason, this idea of needing a mom-type figure, a personal mentor-type figure. It's interesting to me. I'm not 100% sure why that happened yet.
So from the time that you put this ad in this publication, from that moment to the moment you have now, how has the business grown?
It's growing slowly but steadily, which is great for me because it's getting to know people, really getting them to trust me to see if we can have a successful dialogue. Also figuring out what needs are out there. So I wouldn't say I've been under a tsunami of clients, but it's growing, like I said, slowly and steadily, and that seems to me a very good foundation.
So what's a typical situation? First of all, it costs $40 per hour, correct?
Yeah, a new client rate of 30.
Okay, new client rate of 30. What is a typical interaction? How does someone get in contact with you? And what's the typical kind of things that they call you for and discuss, and how do you help them?
Well, people primarily get in touch through my website, needamomnyc.com, although I guess there have been a couple personal recommendations too. And it varies right now. Some people just want some feedback. A couple clients don't have great relationships with their mothers and want to just kind of have what they perceive as a normal, calm relationship of someone listening and giving advice when asked. Other people have some services they want done, and one woman wanted me to sit with her while she cleans out her closet, just kind of give her encouragement. A mom has contacted me. Her daughter's had some surgery, and the mom doesn't live in New York and has to go back to her hometown, and she wants me to check in on the daughter to see how she's progressing and that her medication is all in order, that sort of thing. Another young woman is working on an idea for a musical, and I have a background in theater, so we're talking about how one develops a musical. So it's varying right now. It's interesting to see what's coming up.
When I read the story, one of the things you just mentioned, one of the things you do is give advice when asked. And I got to thinking, when has a mother ever not given advice? Usually it's you get the advice whether you want it or not.
Well, that's the difference. I won't give the advice unless you want it.
Okay. So this is a growing business. Are you only dealing with people who are in New York?
Well, physically, yes. So there are a couple people who have contacted me from other places in the country. One I'm having an actual correspondence with by letter. This is a young man who wanted to have a correspondence with a mother-son correspondence, which he's never had in his life. And we're doing that, which I think is actually charming. And I can't wait to do it. And then there are a few other people reaching out. I'm not sure that I can do this digitally over the internet, but we'll see. I also, this morning, someone asked me to fly to Turkey, and I don't think that's going to happen right now.
Have you thought of franchising this idea?
Yeah, I've thought of it, and I've had numerous requests from across the country and even the world, but that's something I will think about more seriously after I make sure that this thing here in New York has legs, because that's a whole different ball of wax. I mean, I need a business plan, investors. I need to figure out how one vets people to be the same kind of need a mom I am in other places. So it's not off the table, but it needs some serious consideration before I could even agree to do it.
What is the ratio between men and women who need a mom?
Well, for my services so far, it's been mostly women. I would say 70-20, 75-25. But I think maybe that's because women are more comfortable reaching out. I'm not sure. We'll see.
And do the needs of the women who need a mom differ from that of men who need a mom?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, you know, I think there are slight differences, but I think the guys just want someone who, you know, what I feel is with both genders, that in New York, people are working really hard and the financial stressors are there and they're going. It's competitive. It's hard. And they both genders sometimes want someone to just say, whoa, step back, take a breath. Let's look at this objectively and try and figure out what's going on. And often, which is fascinating to me, people have their own answers. They just need someone to sit and ask them the right questions and talk out loud about it, and then they figure out what's going on. And, you know, I've been asked by women to help with some mending, guys to help with some putting a button on a shirt or writing a letter to a landlord. So it's I think the needs are not too diverse right now.
Just the idea of a need-a-mom and the fact that you went out there and started this, do you think that it says something about our society, and I'm talking now just generally, you know, people are looking at their devices all the time, their eyes are down, they're checking their phones, they find something like you, for instance, at the expense of looking around and creating actual relationships with people that might be in their building or in their office or in their neighborhood, which is what we used to do.
Well, yeah, I think there's certainly a good possibility that that's part of it. And, you know, the saying need a mom was a really easy way to brand it. It makes sense. But in some ways, I feel more what I'm doing is I'm not a life coach, but I'm a kind of a personal mentor. People seem to be able to get mentors in their professional life. It seems very important to them. But they forget sometimes that someone who's definitely older, hopefully a little wiser, might be able to help mentor them through more personal rough waters as they go through their lives.
How do your own two sons feel about you being the need-a-mom online?
Oh, they think it's a hoot. They love it. And they're very supportive, and they also know they have pride of place.
Excellent. They have squatter's rights, basically, right?
Absolutely.
People, again, you can go to your website, which is needamomnyc.com, correct?
That's right.
Nina, thank you very, very much for doing this. It's an ingenious idea that you've got going. You certainly have touched on something. And continued success with what you do.
Well, great. It was great speaking with you, and thank you so much.
Nina Keneally, the woman behind Need a Mom. That's Need a Mom. And you can visit my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0327, and you'll find the links to Nina's site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
23-year-old Nicholas Allegretto was convicted of shoplifting in Cambridge, England in October. The prosecutor knows Allegretto is his man because shortly after the February theft, police released a surveillance photo of Allegretto leaving the store for the unpaid-for item, a magnet worth about $50. Plus, Allegretto had come to a police station to complain that the sudden public picture made him look guilty, and the unwanted publicity of the photo led to his losing his job as a roofer. In fact, he claimed he intended to pay for the item, but had gotten distracted. And besides, he added, his body language often looks somewhat dodgy anyway. So, he's caught on camera and upset at the fact that his photo has gone public. He goes to the police station to complain about the unwanted publicity. He admits he had the item in question, but was distracted when it came time to pay. I'm sorry, pal, but leaving the store with the item without paying for it is the very definition of shoplifting. And you, sir, are the very definition of an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0327. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0327. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberstationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been getting jiggy with Peter Anthony Holder and the Stuff File program, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. He's a bad mama jamma, and after he spends some chill time in his crib, he'll be back to get down with his bad self. Word up.